The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on health and healing. I'm going to talk about why green tea can make a difference in your diet and especially helping you lose weight. I'm also going to talk about why you should be very careful about any of those breast cancer drugs you're taking, and how by being rehydrated, meaning having plenty of liquid in your diet each day, except for coffee, that's not counting, that actually dehydrates you, why it's so important for helping with pain relief. But if you're dehydrated, and you probably are most of the time, that can lead to mood shifts. So the latest on health and healing coming your way. My guest early on in our program today will be Elizabeth Woodward. She has served as the head librarian for the British Columbia Ministry of Health for 25 years and is a colleague of Professor David Ray Griffin, best known for being a leading scholar spearheading new investigations on 9/11. In addition to having researched Professor Griffin's 7 published books debunking the 9/11 Commission, in many of its articles, she co-founded Consensus 9/11, a recent international organization of critics of the official 9/11 Commission report. And what they're doing, they're applying quality science. And this is important because there's so many people who have opinions about 9/11, but the vast majority cannot be supported, and a lot of them are just not true. So they've selected a group of high-level academics, and they've only focused upon what can they actually prove unequivocally in a court of law. Today, for the first time in an exclusive interview, each one of the issues that they can prove that shows there was a conspiracy around 9/11. We will have the actual evidence, and this is from a specific group of scientists who have created a consensus after reviewing the literature independently. So this should be interesting. Information that we should share with people who are cynics or critical of anyone who suggests that any information about 9/11 was inaccurate. We'll have the actual inaccurate information for you today. If time permits, I'm going to talk about our footprint today as far as water goes. How do we use water without even thinking about it? Well, how about a shirt? To make a shirt takes about 3,000 gallons of water. So I'm going to show you how to reduce your water footprint. And then the 12 tipping points. We have a lot to share. I don't know if I'll get to all of it. Probably not. And I had a special commentary about would we have drugged Albert Einstein today? How anti-authoritarianism is deemed today a mental health problem. It is in the books now. It's called oppositional defiance disorder, which means that Michael Moore and Chris Hedges, Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, all the people who are defiant against authorities because they have good reason to, today would all be drugged or labeled as mentally ill, and still may be. What we have to know about this, that'll be a commentary, probably not today, but I'll get to it shortly. Let's begin, always with the latest on how we can heal and help make our lives better. I believe that green tea is quite simply one of nature's most perfect healing nutrients. It comes as a leaf. It comes on a bush. There are places in India and China where you have 100 miles of these growing. They grow up and over hills because it requires a certain temperature, a certain terrain. There has to be proper drainage. And if you're in a flat area, you don't have the drainage. You can have rotting of or excess water that adversely affects hydration, which means you don't get the right leaf. Now, once you get that leaf and you harvest it, then it's how they dry it, how it's processed, of whether it becomes green or white or red or black. All of them have healing properties. This is just the latest. And this is from the peer review journal of Functional Medicine. And this came from Peking University, the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and Japan's research center. Here's what it says. Quote, green tea enriched with catechins may reduce body fat levels and visceral fat. Now, we all know what visceral fat, that's what you see. That's the little love handles on the side or a pot belly or the fat on our buttocks or thighs. That decreased substantially after 12 weeks of consuming an enriched green tea amount in the diet. And that was in a group of obese individuals. In fact, green tea contains water-extractable polyphenols, and these are very powerful. One of the ways you can get your green tea is just by having the green tea and putting it in some hot water and letting it steep for about 5 minutes, and then I suggest putting in some Manuka honey. Very powerful. But you can also buy the green tea capsules that have a specific potency of the catechins in them. That gives you more, and it's more standardized. Either way, I suggest you get about 400 milligrams of green tea into your diet each day. When I was doing my dietetics as a registered dietitian training, and I was working up at Trafalgar Hospital, I noticed how many people were dehydrated. And I brought it to the attention of the nurses. And no, they weren't that dehydrated. I said, well, how do you know? You don't have any tests to show their hydration levels. They only knew how much they were giving these people. But frequently, when you took away a food tray, you would see that they had very little water or tea or any beverage they had consumed. Now studies show that thousands of individuals in nursing homes every year die because they simply dehydrate to the where body's systems collapse. As a runner, I know that there are three types of perspiration. One is called profuse perspiration. This is where your body's just drenched with sweat. Most people don't realize that you also have insensible perspiration. That's what your feet give off. And if you have sandals or if you have shoes that breathe and socks that breathe, you don't notice it because it's wicked off and it dries. And versus when you're wearing pantyhose or some artificial fabric that doesn't allow the body to breathe, then you notice you're really perspiring in those areas. Most people don't know how much you have to drink in a day, and hence most people actually are dehydrated. How do I know this? Because every one of the human studies I've done on lifestyle intervention, we do an impedance test. An impedance test shows how much lean body muscle, fat, and water you have. Most people are dehydrated. And you don't realize if you're 5% dehydrated, it doesn't sound like a lot, but you lose a lot of energy and you disrupt the potassium-sodium balance. You end up with edema and swelling and pain. So rehydration is very important, especially for people suffering from any kind of pain. Now, pain comes from a lot of different causes. It can be viral, traumatic, environmental. It can be from inflammatory agents you've consumed. But no matter what the source of the pain, hydration, getting lots of good, clean water into your system, tremendously benefits the body. Just that alone is a way to help a lot of people with chronic pain overcome their pain. This is the latest study to show you what also happens when you're not properly hydrated. This is from the British Journal of Nutrition. This was done at the University of Connecticut. It says, quote, even mild dehydration can modify your mood. Quote, even mild dehydration can alter a person's mood, energy level, and ability to think clearly, leaving them cranky and tired. Led by Professor Lawrence Armstrong, University of Connecticut, researchers revealed that the average effect from mild dehydration, and that's defined at just 1.5% loss in normal water volume, were the same whether people were sitting, at rest, or active and exercising. And then it affected your mood. Now think of the runners that go out there and sweat a lot, and then you drink afterwards. You almost never drink enough. We tested this twice on over 300 athletes from our club that ran the New York City Marathon. Normally, we would lose about 9 pounds of actual weight, but 90% of that was water weight. Now, that's a gallon. 9 pounds is a gallon of water. So if you drank a gallon of water the rest of the day, you still didn't rehydrate because the body has safety mechanisms that most of what you drink, it immediately throws right out of the body as urine. So it might take you a full week of drinking every day to create homeostasis, balance in the body. So the idea that your desire for a liquid is adequate isn't. If you're an athlete, if you wear a lot of clothes, if you sweat a lot, then you definitely should have an impedance test, because the impedance test will tell you whether you're at or below your body water level. A commonly used drug taken by early cancer of the breast patients as frequently as once a day for 5 days has been found to cause significant bone loss even when they are given adequate calcium vitamin D intake. The bone has been found to worsen age-related decrease in bone mineral density by about 300%, increasing chances of fractures many-fold. This was published in the British journal The Lancet, and so this is important. In the study, cortical thickness of women who took this, what is called exemestane, E-X-E-M-E-S-T-A-N-E, declined by a substantial margin. Now, this is just one drug. There are many drugs used. I just want you to know that in the very near future, a major one-hour report on the politics of cancer, an original investigative reporting white paper, will be presented on this program and then posted. We've been working on this for over a year, and it's all footnoted, and it just shows you that almost nothing you've been told about what causes cancer, how to treat it, is accurate. It's all propaganda. We are costing hundreds of thousands of lives a year of women and men because almost nothing they're told about cancer is correct. Next up, reduced childhood vitamin D level predicts diabetes. This is from the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. And what they found was if your child has low levels of vitamin D, they're far more likely to develop diabetes. Now, vitamin D is not difficult to get. In the summertime, 20 to 30 minutes out in the sun will manufacture all the vitamin D in your skin you need. But how often are we in the sun in the winter? I remember once asking my mom why she gave us cod liver oil, which I hated. Every single day, she would make us take a tablespoon of cod liver oil. And then in the wintertime, she insisted that all of her boys play outside. Even as infants, she would dress us up warmly and then have us outside. And she said, because it builds up your immune system. Well, my mom wasn't a scientist, but she was doing what a whole generation and generation before her had done. Acclimate a child early in life. Well, they were all correct. The more your body is exposed to challenges at the environmental level, the healthier you become. The latest study shows that those who are outdoors in the woods, especially on farms, have much stronger immune systems because they're exposed to so many different toxins and natural allergens, their bodies develops a resistance versus someone in the city that lives in a more artificial environment and isn't around nature. So my suggestion is give your kid a safe level of vitamin D every day. Not only is that good for the immune system, but it also could prevent diabetes. One way for men and women to lose weight, especially if you're really overweight, according to this study done at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark, is to eat seaweed. Quote, seaweed, the brown seaweed and the fiber improves weight loss when regularly consumed by overweight adults. And a new study from Southern Medical Journal shows that soy offers hope for treating resistant prostate cancer. And let me quote this. A Dr. Joshi, MD, and colleagues at Pennsylvania State University enrolled men with treatment-resistant prostate cancer that had not metastasized and assigned them to 3 servings of soy per day for 2 years, during which the PSA, prostate-specific antigen levels, were monitored. After 2 years, half the men showed a response to soy with permanent decline in the PSA levels, or stable PSA levels. And the researcher remarked that soy may reduce PSA via reduction in the expression of androgen receptor and other mechanisms. So, this was published in Southern Medical Journal. One more study marked up for why soy is good for us. And 3 more here, a meta-analysis on vitamin D. And this was multiple studies, as published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, of 65,000 men and women, showed that the more vitamin D that you consume, the less likely risk of dying overall for up to 27 years. How about that? So if you're taking vitamin D in a good amount, you could live a much longer life and not die of other conditions. And then a separate study showed that vitamin E, this was published in Nature Communications and done at Georgia Health Science University, showed that the alpha tocopherol, the natural vitamin D, was able to repair the cell membrane. Now, a permeable barrier surrounding the cell that separates its contents from its environment while allowing the transport of necessary substances. So, one more reason to take vitamin E each day. I suggest between 400 units and 1,000 units, because it helps your cells stay healthier longer. And finally, vitamin B12 and folic acid improve memory in this study. It was a 2-year study, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and it showed that 400 micrograms of folic acid, 900 people were in this study, and 100 micrograms B12. And then they compared it to a placebo, and they found that verbal memory, attention, processing speed, all did not decline, and greater improvements from baseline in immediate and delayed recall scores were observed in those that received the B12 and folic acid, and none of that happened in the placebo group. So the takeaway is, when you have, and I believe that's way too little vitamin B12 and folic acid, I believe you should have 1 milligram of each, the folate and the B12 from methylated forms, you could improve your memory. And think of the 90 million Americans over 40 years of age today who really need an improvement in memory. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Now, before we go to our guest, I do want to get in something on the 12 tipping points. I had a program last week with 3 professors who are all experts on our environment and our impact upon it and why we have to do something about it. Currently, more than half of the entire population in the United States does not believe that global warming is real or that it's man-made. That's because of propaganda, and that's not because of science. Most discussions involve our environment resting upon global warming as a single issue. However, there are multiple issues. Let me just share some of these with you. Now, these have not tipped yet. One is the disruption of the Antarctic Circumpolar Current, linking together the Southern Pacific and Atlantic and Indian Oceans, is the Antarctic Circumpolar Current, or ACC. The current moves west to east around the continent, displacing 34 billion gallons of water per second. Importantly, that current's nutrients sustain trillions of phytoplankton near the water's surface, which absorb large amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And after soaking up all that CO2, the phytoplankton sink to the cold ocean depths, creating what is known as a carbon sink. This process helps compensate for excess CO2 levels caused by the burning of fossil fuels and deforestation. I suspect, as do the experts, that global warming could disrupt this sensitive cycle, weakening the current's intensity, leading to an increase in carbon dioxide levels. And that circumpolar current has shifted farther south over the course of the last decade. Its strength is the same, hasn't tipped. Now, another thing you have not heard about is the release of methane clathrates. Methane clathrates refers to the huge supply of frozen methane found below the ocean floor and the Arctic permafrost. We believe there's somewhere between 1 and 2.5 trillion tons of methane. Those underground gas chambers continuously release methane into the atmosphere. And as global warming causes permafrost to melt, the clathrates become more vulnerable to destabilization. Consequently, there's an increased risk of significant methane discharge being sent into the atmosphere. Models predict that just one good-sized gaseous injection could accelerate global warming up to 25%. The signs are there. Methane released into the atmosphere has doubled over the last 150 years, and recent measurements in clathrate hotspots, include Alaska, Siberia, show that levels of the gas are five times greater than expected. And what makes the situation even more concerning is the fact that methane is 20 times more powerful than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. Now, why is this really important? Because the water in the Arctic is not deep. It's about 500 feet. And normally we have that area so frozen, so cold, that the methane is trapped underneath. But because we've had excessively warm summers, the snow on top of the water has melted. And the longer that stays melted, the more the sun goes through the water instead of bouncing off the ice back into the atmosphere. When it goes through the water, it reaches down and warms up the bottom of that floor, and then that releases the methane. There was for thousands of years, you could go across the tundra in in Russia for 1,000 miles, and you couldn't take a hammer and break open the dirt. I mean, it is just frozen. Not now. Now it's soft. That means that trillions of tons of methane are now coming up from the permafrost, from the tundra, and it's being released. So none of the politicians seem to be aware of this, but mainstream science is tracking it, and I'm on top of it. And finally, one more is the disruption of the monsoon season. Global warming-induced changes to the monsoon season could cause dramatic decreases in the food supply for billions of people here on Earth. As the planet's temperatures rise, many scientists are predicting a shift in the course of monsoons and their accompanying rains. Scientists predict that such a shift would mean much less rainfall in the Indian subcontinent. There you have India and Pakistan and Bangladesh, as well as parts of Africa and Southwest Asia. And since the agriculture of these areas is largely dependent upon monsoon patterns, you start having a disruption in that monsoon cycle, it would be devastating, affecting food production. They simply wouldn't be able to grow any food. Experts also foresee an increased risk of wildfires as a result of this phenomena. After all, if things are that dry and they're not getting the water, then they're going to be crisp, and then you're going to have fires. So you're going to have fires, and you're not going to have food. And we're not doing a single thing to prevent any of this. So those are our first of the 12 tipping points. Each day I'll try to share a few more. I'm Gary Noll. Just one quick program announcement. On March the 12th at 7:30, I am having a free showing premiere at Theater for the New City at 1st Avenue between 9th and 10th Street of my Homeless Vet film. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. There'll be a Q&A afterwards. If you'd like to attend, call 212-254-1109. 212-254-1109. And you'll be able to attend if seats are available. The last five shows they've done there, they've all been packed with people sitting on the floor. So this will be my last mention of this, and hopefully you'll come and see how important this is. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Noll. Now to our guest segment of our program. We're titling this Consensus 9/11, a new organization to scientifically review and assess the evidence behind the 9/11 Commission report. I gave you her bio earlier in detail, Elizabeth Woodward. Nice to have you with us today, Elizabeth.
Hello. Good morning.
Elizabeth, there are millions upon millions of hits on the internet. There are thousands of articles. And unfortunately, in any legitimate movement to seek the truth, there will be those who share misguided, uninformed, or out-and-out deceptive information with the hopes from some of the provocateurs or plants to discredit the whole movement. Even now, Bill O'Reilly and others say, oh, you know, those 9/11 conspiratorial nuts, even when they're talking about Judge Napolitano, but will not debate the experts on what they consider unsupported allegations. Because we are a program of record, because so many people use the information that we present, and we pride ourselves in the level of our scholarship of reviewing something not based upon personal biases or agendas or ideologies, but rather facts. Facts that we can verify. I know that what you've all done, and I've been hoping you would do this, is you have brought together those people who have scholarship in their background, who bring a high level of academic and scientific integrity, and then you review the literature, you review the facts, you review all the forensic evidence, and then you come to some consensus of what you can agree upon are irrefutable points of view. And with that, I believe, and keeping it very tight, I believe that you will make some important strides. So that said, would you please take us through some of the areas that you have, as a group, agree with, strongly agree with, that in using the simplified Delphi method for over a six-month period to arrive at your panel's consensus point, what we, the public, now can have some confidence is simply capable of being used in a court of law, could be used under oath, could be used if there's ever another 9/11 panel where real experts are allowed to testify instead of a bunch of puppets for the government. So take us through each of the important points, all right?
Yes, I'd be very happy to do that. The most obvious point of entry into the problematic aspects of the official story is the collapse of World Trade Center 7, which was an enormous building adjacent to the Twin Towers, 47-story steel structure with a base the size of a football field. And it had been recently renovated. I think it was built in the 80s, and it had recently been strengthened for various floors. It had been reinforced. And that building collapsed at 5:20 in the afternoon. The first part of it coming down, for the first few seconds, the building was in complete free fall at the speed of gravity. It's just as if you dropped a cannonball off the top of it. The building fell with all its 82 steel columns, all collapsed simultaneously. And there is only one way that has ever been done, ever been seen to occur, which is controlled demolition. So even the government agency that studied the building has acknowledged in its concluding scientific report, NIST, they acknowledged that that building came down at free fall speed. So once you see that, then you realize that there are many other questions to ask. That's the entry point for a lot of people into querying the official story. Then we go on to the Twin Towers themselves. And we have 4 points about the Twin Towers. The first is that fuel fires burn at about 1,000 degrees Celsius, and they could never have melted the steel and iron columns, which take 1,500 degrees. So not only that, but huge sections of the perimeter steel columns weighing many tons were ejected horizontally as far as 600 feet. So it takes a lot of energy to eject things sideways. It's not just a free fall collapse from burning paper and office fires and jet fuel. Over 100 of the roughly 500 members of the Fire Department of New York who were at the site that day reported what they described as massive explosions in the Twin Towers. The other thing is that the Twin Towers were built to withstand airliners with the approximate same size and speed of those that struck them. One of the architects was explaining this. He said that you could liken the Twin Towers exterior to a mesh screen, such as you might see in a screen door, and that if you poked a pencil into it at one particular point, it would yield there, but the screen itself would stay intact. It was built that way. So a plane of the size that they built it to withstand hit it, and you know, like an hour or half an hour later these buildings collapse, which is doesn't make a lot of sense. Another major problem with the official story is that there a scientific team of 9 scientists under the leadership of Dr. Niels Harrit from the University of Copenhagen discovered a substance called nanothermite throughout the dust. They analyzed 4 samples very carefully using some specs. I'm not clear on the science myself, but they used really modern methods of looking at these spikes and comparing these chemicals to known samples. And this nanothermite is a very, very high-tech, man-made substance which never appears in nature. It never existed until human beings created it in laboratories. So that has to be accounted for. And the only normal source of this stuff is in military laboratories. It's not something that could ever be made in a cave in Afghanistan, for example. Now, past the Twin Towers, if we go to the Pentagon, there's a great deal of discussion about the whole issue of what happened at the Pentagon, and so the panel doesn't feel that it can, because there is no consensus on especially on what hit the Pentagon or the flight path that it took, we're looking at other aspects of that story that don't add up. And the one that everybody agrees on is that the pilot, the purported pilot, Hani Hanjour, was a hopelessly incompetent pilot. his trainers, they looked into who taught him how to fly, and he couldn't even fly a little Cessna. The people wouldn't even go up in the air with him. He was scary. And that was in the United States where he was learning to fly. So the idea that this man could get into a huge airliner and bring it down from 7,000 feet in a 270-degree spiral, bring that plane down and then bring it along the ground without touching the grass and fly it at 500 miles an hour into the bottom story of the Pentagon, that just nobody can support that. There's an organization called Pilots for 9/11 Truth, and there are dozens of former commercial airline pilots who just laugh. They say, "I've got 6,000 flying hours. I could never do that." So we all agree that Honey Hanjour was not the pilot. So that brings into question the official story. That's their claim. They have to come back and say, well, what did happen with that plane? Or was there even a plane? Now, there's another major point about the Flight 93 crash. That's the one they made all the movies about, the Let's Roll flight, where the heroes wrested control from the plane. During the fight to take over the plane crashed in Pennsylvania. There were actually two crash sites. That's one point. They cordoned off two areas where there were sets of debris, but the main area that was claimed to be the crash site, you can go online and you can look at this. I don't know, it's about 30 feet long, kind of a slice in the ground with smoke coming out of it. And when the mayor arrived and the early journalists arrived on the site soon after it was reported, they were looking at each other and saying, well, where's the plane? We must be in the wrong place. There was absolutely nothing there to show that a huge airliner had crashed. And at the same time, 8 miles away, there were reported pieces of debris and a lot of paper and envelopes and mail. I guess the thing was carrying mail and parts of airplane seats and even human remains were found at Indian Lake. So something happened to that plane to disperse its contents higher up. And there has been talk about a shoot down, which the government says did not happen. So this raises questions about investigating that shoot down, although we don't say that on the panel. That's just my own personal aside. I have to be very careful about speaking on behalf of these 22 distinguished panel members. There are 7 PhDs on the panel, and there are 3 attorneys, 4 journalists, a medical doctor, and a variety of other people. And I'm a medical librarian, so I sort of do the spadework research.
All right, let me go through this then, since I have the points here, and I'll just recapitulate some of this. Here are the points that you as a group have decided are simply capable of proving that the official story is at odds with the facts. And therefore, you believe that an independent panel should be brought together so you, as a group, could present your information against the official facts. For example, a claim regarding Osama bin Laden, the official account we know about, but then you talk about the best evidence and you challenge his association with this. Then another claim, a claim about the destruction of the Twin Towers, the impact jet fuel and fire, which you mentioned. Also, a claim excluding explosions in the Twin Tower. Another claim excluding explosions in the other tower, as you're saying, many, many witnesses, including firefighters, police officers, rescuers, heard this. We even interviewed someone on the program who was in the basement prior to the plane hitting when there was an explosion in the basement that threw him 8 feet against a wall and everyone else in the room against a wall. about 8 seconds before the plane hit. Now, that would tell us that there were demolitions going off just before the plane hit. And because he was also awarded a medal and given an award and was brought before the American media as this kind of hero who helped other people in the basement out, the media didn't focus upon the story that he was saying prior to the plane hitting. There were explosions downstairs, ripped a hole in the wall, blew us all over the place, and I'm helping a buddy get out of that area, and he's all covered in fire prior to the plane hitting. Well, that's the story, because that then shows you that there were explosions, and that would have gone along with all the people who heard explosions who were there at Ground Zero. Then you're claiming the collapse of the building number 7 that had no missile hit it, that had no plane hit it, and yet it collapsed in free fall, which goes against all the laws of physics. So these are some of the claims that you have, and even the thermitic materials in the dust there. And so you are willing now as a group to come forward and say, set aside all the other claims and counterclaims and all the people with opinions. We have the scholarship, we have the facts, we have the evidence, the forensic evidence, to say that we can challenge under oath the official 9/11 report. Is that correct or incorrect?
That is correct. The problem all along has been that the mainstream media has claimed for a decade that it's not in a position to evaluate the technical evidence being presented by the 9/11 truth movement. And the mainstream media is in the exact same position as the average physician confronting 21 million citations in its Medline database. And to solve that problem in medicine, The expert committees have been formed in every possible field you could imagine to create consensus statements among themselves that they can publish and where the average physician can go and say, okay, this is the best evidence that medicine has been able to come up with. It comes from the American Diabetic Association, and they used the Delphi method where all the panelists were blind to one another. There's no possibility of pressure, just like in an election. You make your votes on evidence. Well, we've done the same thing with the 9/11 consensus panel. We call our points consensus points. In medicine, they call them consensus statements, and they're guides. They're the best evidence that... And they use the methodology that's been accepted scientifically to guide the whole medical profession. And that's where I come into it, because I'm a medical librarian, and I dealt with those consensus statements for 25 years.
Okay. Well, we appreciate the scholarship that you brought forward, because now I am putting out this challenge to Bill O'Reilly. Mr. O'Reilly, you are claiming that anyone who challenges the official 9/11 report is a conspiratorialist, a nut job. Why don't you invite on, as I have today, any of the PhDs or attorneys or scientists or Elizabeth Woodward, who, using a very respected method of vetting the facts, have irrefutable proof that the official version is wrong in at least 20 separate areas. And they've done this independently of each other, so there's been no pressure, no peer pressure, and yet they've come to a consensus. If we really want the truth in the United States, and I believe the American people does, then have the courage to invite them on. And I realize it's difficult for you to let anyone talk for more than about 3 seconds before you throw your full weight and personality against someone. But do as we do. Give them the respect and time. Let them make their arguments. Let them present their documents, and then challenge the information, if you will, because up to this point you have not allowed that. And those who have seen the evidence are compelled now to change their position. Elizabeth Woodward, thank you, and all the other scientists and activists who have taken the time to create a Consensus 9/11, this new organization, for scientifically reviewing and assessing the truth behind the 9/11 Commission report.
Thank you very much, Gary. And the website is at consensus911.org.
We look forward to more as you develop this. And we'll have you on here because we go worldwide and we have a very large audience. And again, this was an exclusive interview. You heard it first here today. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Just a program announcement. This coming Saturday, there will be an effort by Food and Water Watch, New York statewide activities, including a push for statewide bans against hydrofracking. And the rally to ban hydrofracking, Saturday, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., Cathedral of St. John the Divine, that's at 1047 Amsterdam Avenue. And you have an RSVP, foodandwaterwatch.org, foodandwaterwatch.org. That is to join together to protest hydrofracking as Cathedral of St. John the Divine this Saturday, 1 to 3 p.m. And we hope that you're able to join it because we're supporting it and we're bringing together coalitions working on different issues to support one another. That's why at our rallies and at our hearings, we always invite the anti-hydrofracking and anti-nuclear people, anti-genetic engineering people, all together as one. Now, we have something unusual we're going to do in a moment, but let me just mention our special of the day. Once a week, we take a few minutes to offer a special, all the proceeds of which go to fund this non-commercial radio station. Today, we are offering you the new and improved Red Stuff. This is my own invention. It's great. It has 10,000 ORAC, which is all those good antioxidants that trap the bad free radicals. It is made from the highest quality fruits. It's got 34 fruits with enzymes and probiotics and in it. It's got only 40 calories, so it's got a very low glycemic index. It has no fat. And it has 8 grams of fiber, which is good. But listen to what is in the Red Stuff. Now, mind you, I have Red Stuff and Berry Blast. I have Green Stuff and Greens and Grains. Why do I have 4 different things? Because to give you the amount of each nutrient, each food, these are whole foods, by the way, I would have to give you such a little amount if I put them all in one. So I broke them up into 4. I take all 4 every day. This way I'm giving you the industrial strength amounts, the amounts that I believe can make a difference in our overall intake. For example, I have tomatoes in here, and we know how important tomatoes are, 950 milligrams, but tart cherries, 950 milligrams. Apple pectin, acerola, 900 milligrams. Most time when I've seen acerola, you get 50 milligrams, 25 milligrams. I'm giving you 900 because it's so good. Mango steam, organic flaxseed powder, prune powder, macai. Now, macai berry is a very powerful. It's a superstar. I don't know of anyone else that has it, anything. I have it. Blood oranges, red wine extract. Now, you know how important red wine is. You know of all the nutrients in red wine. Well, most time you get a very little, tiny amount. I'm giving you super size 650 milligrams, plus prune, plums, oranges, pears, pomegranate, mangoes, watermelon, papaya, passion fruit, kiwis, 250 milligrams of green tea extract, that's 250 milligrams, bromelain, 200 milligrams, digestive enzymes, amylase, lipase, cellulase, papain, resveratrol, 175 milligrams, that's a big dose, cinnamon, 125 milligrams, that's a big dose, ginger root, plus probiotics, 8 billion probiotics from 4 different forms of probiotics, all that in one giant 500 gram serving. It's called New and Improved Red Stuff. And again, I believe that this would make an enormous difference in everyone's diet. It's a whole food. It's a raw food. It's new and improved. It's all natural. And it's on great sale. Its sale is a big discount. Today only it's $75. And all that money goes to this station. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for the new and improved red stuff. That's our special of the day. Now, I have something unusual. We're going to try something. If it works here, we're going to try it on some of the other non-commercial radio stations. I help them raise funds. We're going to have a donation by a very famous American painter, one of the most famous American painters and artists in American history. He is so kindly, as is his nature, as he is a gentle and caring and loving soul, he has donated one of his paintings. He is Peter Max. And Peter was at our screening of Knocking on the Devil's Door, where it was a packed house at the Ethical Culture Center, 1,000 people. And afterwards, Peter came up and he said, "Gary, this whole business of protecting our environment, this has been a part of my life. This is what I help do with a lot of my efforts, help groups." Well, I just want to acknowledge Peter. He gave every single person from the anti-fracking and the anti-nuke group, he gave them all some of his work so they could auction it off and earn money for themselves. Good for him. And he did it without any publicity. That's the kind of guy he is. He never seeks publicity for himself. So he said, "What can I do to help the movement?" And I said, "Well, bring a painting." And that's what he has done. And he's on the phone today. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Gary. It's so nice to hear your voice. How you been, buddy?
My good friend, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. And Peter, tell us about the painting that you are donating today that we're going to ask people to call in and give us an offer on it.
It's a Liberty painting. It's a 12 by 12 inch Liberty. I was responsible, as you may know, for getting the Statue of Liberty renovated. I've been painting Liberties for many years. I painted Liberties on a White House lawn for Ronald Reagan. And as you may remember, because we used to speak about it, then I called up Lee Iacocca, and he raised, I think, $350 million to get the inside of the Liberty renovated. So I was very proud to have done that. And so I've always painted Liberties, and when you asked me to give you something, I gave you something extremely special, you know, one of my most iconic images, you know, that people love, that, you know, it's America's icon, the Statue of Liberty, and it's on canvas, and I'm glad you're raising, you know, funds for this wonderful event. And I heard you talk about the red stuff. I have it every morning.
Yeah. Well, Peter, I think we just got the painting your staff brought by. Thank you. It's 18 by 18, I believe, not 12 by 12, on canvas.
18 by, yeah.
And it's signed, again, it's an original signature, right? That's you. That's your...
That's correct. I painted it, signed it, and put it for my buddy Gary now.
And it's beautiful. It's the head of the Statue of Liberty, but done Peter Max style. Beautiful colors,
yes,
and beaming out. Now, Peter, this would normally sell for what?
How much is it, 16 by 16 sell for?
I think it was 12.
About 15,000, 18,000.
Okay. Well, here's what we're going to do. And we're doing this as an experiment. We're going to ask the people in this audience who would like this Peter Max on canvas signed painting to put on your wall. Whoever offers the best amount in the next 10 minutes gets it, whatever that amount might be. And and that's the way we do it. And Peter is, he's a mensch. By the way, this is the same Peter Max who, when he heard on a radio station that a cow had jumped out of the kill line in a butchering factory,
in a slaughterhouse, yeah,
and ran away and was hiding in a field, and they found the cow, and it was hiding with his head in the bushes, Peter called and said, "I'll buy the cow." And that Peter bought this cow and put it upstate so it could live a long life. That's what
it was
like.
That was a big deal for me. You know, I went to visit the cow probably like 40 times every month or so, and every 2-3 weeks when I was upstate. And about a year and a half ago, her life ended. She died from, you know, natural death. But it gave me so much, you know, pride in my heart that I did that, you know, that I gave this. And when you think how many cows get killed on a daily basis, and when you get to know a cow, like people sometimes know a cat or a dog, they're such beautiful, sweet, sweet species. Really, really nice. So I was so happy. And I miss her. She was all... The whole cow was color beige, you know, one beautiful shade of beige.
Well, you save one cow from slaughter, And people don't realize each day, if we just do one thing that connects us at the spiritual level to another human being. You can't save the world. You can't stop every person who's hungry from starving. But if you do one, and you certainly have done more than one, your whole career, I know you for a long time. We're friends for how long? 35 years you and I are friends?
Yeah. That's how long. I try to do something every day. All the time. When I hear about it, see about it, I'm being asked about it, I never say no.
Well, that's who you are, Peter, and that's why you're a friend. And thank you very much for donating a very expensive painting. And whoever calls 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065 in the next 10 minutes and gives a bid, whichever is the biggest bid, you get it. You can come down today and pick it up. And we'll let you know, Peter, who it is. And we thank you for donating this to the station. And hopefully this will be a success, and we can help other non-commercial stations out there.
Very nice. Good luck, and you're the best.
Thank you. Peter Max, he is an iconic individual, a great humanitarian, caring person, very spiritual person, and he donated a very expensive painting. And if we get, I don't care what the bid is, remember, whatever the bid is, if it's the highest, you get it. How about that? Right, and you have a signed Peter Max painting in your home. Just another way that we're looking to make non-commercial radio more viable in fundraising. And remember, the Progressive Radio Network is the only non-commercial radio network 24/7 that no one ever has to raise funds except me. And that's only once in a while. Now we're just being a little more creative with it. In studio is Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary. Hello. I've got some great emails. I love it when people email in with their remarkable times that they've shared with you in the past here. This is a lady. She came with her mother when she was 19 to see you in Phoenix in a lecture. You were only 21 and 20 or 22, that sort of age, and when the lecture started, it was absolutely packed. There were about 6,000 to 7,000 people, but you didn't show up to the lecture, and everyone was wondering what had happened. So Dr. Pablo Arola got up. He was a very famous man, especially in Phoenix. He began to talk, and he kept talking until they could find you. And soon enough, about 50 minutes later, you came from the back of the room. You came up to the front, and you were laughing, and you were telling the audience that you'd been at the back of the building for about an hour, not knowing that you were at the wrong end of the building, and people don't walk in Phoenix, they drive. So you were coming from the other side of the building, and they absolutely loved the lecture. It was a 2.5-hour long lecture. You had them all laughing. You had a light blue shirt, and you were wearing a white suit, and the mother was absolutely galvanized with it, and she says this was what had caused her to get into health and nutrition. You were 100% authentic. You had no ego. You weren't doing it for money. You were just doing it to help people. And you answered people's questions for about 4 to 5 hours afterwards. And she's so grateful because it was one of those, as you've said before, remarkable moments for her. And it was what started her journey into health.
That was a long time ago. I remember that. There's a whole story behind that, of how I was finishing a national tour, and Phoenix was the last stop, and a guy who had some health food stores wanted me to come out. But when I got out there, he hadn't sold very many tickets, like 7 tickets. So he was angry with me and said, well, this is a disappointment. I said, I'm sorry. So I said, well, I'll pay for the 7 tickets. And he said, well, then how about paying your own way back? It's all right, I'll pay for my own plane fare. Well, how about paying for your own hotel? It's all right, I'll pay for my own hotel. I didn't have a nickel. I'm saying, I didn't have a nickel. And I'm thinking, where in the hell am I going to sleep? And some guy who was working there invited me to stay out in the desert in this little very hot aluminum little trailer. So for 4 days, but what happened was I didn't know that all the big shows that I had done, Mike Douglas and Johnny Carson, they were all playing that week. I pre-taped them. So I just went in each day. I walked and thumbed into downtown Phoenix, and I did every media I could. I didn't know how many people would come. So when the time came and I it was boiling hot out, even though it was like 6 o'clock. I'm sitting out there, and I didn't see anybody coming in. I'm thinking, wow. And then I see a few people come in. So I finally go in at 7 o'clock, and there are like 9 people sitting around in a circle. So I sit down, and I'm thinking, okay. I said, I'm happy to, you know, spend as much time as you want. I'll answer your questions. And then no one said anything. And I said, well, what questions do you have? No one said anything. So I'm thinking, wow, okay. And then someone started to speak, but they were speaking in Spanish. I thought, oh, no. No, I don't speak Spanish. And then I'm thinking, oh, they're going to want a refund. I don't have it, right? I had $3. And then this woman comes and says, Gary? I said, yes. She says, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm here for my lecture. She said, this isn't your lecture. These are people who are here for a different reason in the back here. I said, I'm in the back? She says, yes. She says, nobody walks in Phoenix in the middle of the sun. It's 115 degrees. She says, come. Took me, and suddenly she opened this door, and thousands of people. You can see a picture of this up on my website. It's one of my very first lectures. And there was Pavel Arolog, the great man who was a great leader in natural health. It was a wonderful evening.
Oh, wow.
And I do remember I was wearing a white suit, so I'm glad that person has good memory. And by the way, there was an electrician I met over at 92nd Street who was giving me some insights about electrical issues, and I didn't get his name or phone number. If you're listening, call my office at 646-926-5422. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening and sharing. I look forward to tomorrow. Tomorrow's a big day. The whole day coming, the solar flares, the truth of what we can expect and what you can do to prepare. You won't want to miss that. Have a nice day, everyone. Stay tuned for Mike Fader coming up in just a minute.